Well, good afternoon. I'm Pat Kinney from the Boston University School of Public Health. Remy did a nice job of introducing my topic also. I'm going to dig a little bit further into this idea of adaptation to heat-related mortality. I'll show some data that I think you've just seen, but I'll go into it in a little bit broader detail. What I plan to talk about, I'll start off revealing some of the evidence we have for geographic variations in this U-shaped curve from place to place across different climates. I will also then spend a moment. Actually, so now you have to see them one by one. So start off looking at some spatial variations in this exposure response function for both the heat effect and also the cold effect. Just pause for a moment and talk a little bit about what I think about adaptation. I'm not an expert on the subject. We actually have an expert here, Chris Ebi. So if we have more discussion of adaptation, I'll probably defer to her. Then I will spend the bulk of my time talking more broadly about temporal changes. Remy just showed some new results for France. There's been several other studies of this concept, and I'll show you some of the results from those other studies and try to draw some conclusions at the end, talking about some implications for future studies, what we need to understand, and also what we need to prepare for. So I just wanted to give you a little bit more background on the kind of data that we're talking about when we do these sorts of studies. And in the epidemiologic world, the studies of the kind that Remy just talked about and that I'm talking about are ones where we have very sort of coarse information both on exposure and on the health outcome. In epidemiology, we use this strange term, an ecological study, which I think in this context where we're talking about ecology, maybe isn't the best term. Maybe another way to think about it is that both mortality and also exposure are kind of a black box in a sense. Mortality in the sense of being a black box is because all we have is a count of deaths, the total number of deaths on a day in a city. So for example, data for Stockholm, I took this because I had an example of what the data look like. So the top curve is daily counts of deaths in the city of Stockholm around the turn of the century. A very typical pattern. But we don't know who's dying, we don't know where they're dying, we just know that somewhere in the city of Stockholm, on a given day, there were this many people that died. And so it's a black box in the sense that we don't really understand the details of that. Likewise for exposure, which is on the bottom, this is daily temperature. This is probably from one or two monitoring stations in the city of Stockholm. We don't really know who was exposed to how much temperature. We simply have an average that we're treating the whole city. But that's the kind of data that we can get. So these kinds of studies have proliferated because the data are quite readily available. They're fairly inexpensive to do the study, very quick and easy. So that's why I think there's been so many studies of this kind, and they do reveal a lot of useful information in spite of their limitations. One thing you'll notice if you look at this closely is that there's this anti-cyclic relationship on overall between temperature and mortality. Mortality in most places is higher in the wintertime and lower in the summertime by about a 20% difference. So you'll see that when temperatures are high, it's when on average mortality is lowest. But in spite of, and so this raises the need for controlling for these seasonal cycles. In Remy's talk, he explained some of the controls that we use, usually a spine function, to try to control for those seasonalities. And then we can focus on the short-term variation, which is the thing that we're trying to reveal. And in spite of the noise and in spite of this overall sort of anti-cyclic relationship, actually, if you look in detail and you do a careful statistical analysis, we usually do reveal that higher temperatures in the summertime are associated with increased mortality risk. It's not at all obvious simply by looking at the picture. But what we end up doing is doing a regression analysis where mortality is the Y variable and the daily temperature is the X variable. Usually looking at fairly short-term lags, you know, yesterday or the day before, temperature usually is what's most important, and controlling for some things like day of week and trends. So those kinds of analyses have been done quite a lot. One of the first studies that looked at multiple cities was this one by Curiero and colleagues from Johns Hopkins. What you see are each of those lines is a different city in the United States. There were 11 cities in his study, and he just simply is doing a sort of a smooth function of mortality versus temperature in each of those cities. And this study was interesting in many ways, but one thing in particular that it showed was that the colder cities, the more northern cities, which are the solid lines, tended, you know, on average had a different kind of shape of relationship than the warmer southern cities. There was evidence that the northern cities had a steeper heat effect, that as heat increased, mortality increased more rapidly than in the southern cities. And on the cold side, it was sort of the opposite. I did some work with a collaborator in China, and we did some work. We did similar work. This is just fitting a simple spline function to the temperature mortality function in four different cities in China. And the cooler cities are the ones on the left. Harbin and Beijing are cooler than Shanghai and Guangzhou. Guangzhou's in the south. You see something that's sort of similar to what Curiero showed, where the temperature mortality U-shaped curve kind of shifts depending on what the normal temperatures are. So when we analyze a function like this, it's very common to look at the minimum mortality temperature, so this sort of the bottom of the curve, and you can see that it changes a lot. In the warmer places, the minimum mortality temperature is higher than in the places that are cooler. But also we're interested in the slopes for the cold effect and also for the heat effect. Another interesting study is one that came out in 2014 by Lee and colleagues. This is data from Joel Schwartz's group at Harvard, and they reported a separate effect in January of temperature, and which is the one on the left across groups of cities, and then on the right side is the effect in July. They grouped, I think there were something like 200 cities. I forget exactly how many did it say there. Doesn't say in this, but it's somewhere between 100 and 200 cities, and they grouped them into these eight different parts, sort of regional classifications. And the colors are sort of related to the average temperatures. The redder ones are the more southerly, warmer places. And so looking over at the July side, we see again that in a place that's typically warm, it has to get a lot hotter before you start to see the mortality going up. And likewise, on the other side, interestingly enough, the places that are typically cold, like the blue and the green, the mortality doesn't go up as much as it gets colder. It's sort of implying that cities have adapted in some way to the kind of climate that they're being exposed to on a regular basis, and not really knowing what it is about those places that make them adapted to their local climate, but suggests that that there's something different across cities that has something to do with adaptation, both on the warm side of the distribution and also the cold side of the distribution. And one thing I would point out that's kind of in contrast to the trend studies, though, the kind that Kremi just showed, is that the trend studies over time, which we'll all show some in a second, they tend to agree more or less on the hot side, that as things are changing over time, the heat effect is diminishing somewhat. But we don't really get the same story. This would imply that the cold effect should go up as it gets warmer, and we're not really seeing that in the trend study. So I just mentioned that in passing. Just to pause for a moment and talk about adaptation and some of the factors that are being, some of the strategies that are being used to accomplish adaptation. Here's one definition, which is adjustment in natural or human systems in response to actual or expected climate stimuli. Or their effects, which moderates harm or exploits beneficial opportunities, and those kinds of adaptation strategies could be at the individual level. They could be societal, and actually you could divide that up into many other sort of subcategories. And I just pause here to mention that this definition sort of implies an active, that adaptation is something active, like you, like society or government or somebody anticipates things are getting worse, or they're observing things are getting worse, and then they implement policies to moderate those impacts. And I think what we're seeing in terms of the trends so far in the heat-related mortality maybe don't reflect so much this sort of active intervention, but more just sort of something naturally or societally that's been happening over time. And so I think using the term adaptation is a little bit fraught, I think, in this setting. So some of the factors that can promote adaptation, we've talked about things like air conditioning. Also urban form can make a big difference. Using reflective building materials, green roofs, white roofs, green space in cities, intervention approaches that involve outreach to vulnerable groups, which often might be elderly people who are stuck at home or outdoor workers, heat warnings that in advance of a heat wave to let people know what's happening, cooling centers or cooling shelters where people can go to stay cool when it's really hot. I think cities have used many of these strategies, and they, to more or less extent, can be effective. There's still relatively limited evidence for the effectiveness of each of these. But there are certainly approaches that are being used. So we see these spatial variations where both the heat effect and the cold effect seem really different in places that have different climates that have seemingly adapted to their local climates. Now I'll show you some of the studies looking at changes over time. And this is actually data that's, I think, Remy just showed from one of my graduate students, Elisa Petkova, from several years ago. And what this shows is for New York City, as we saw, that if we split the data into three categories, and this is quite similar in concept to what they've done here in France that we just saw, we see a gradual reduction in the steepness of the heat part of the curve. Across decades, up to 2005, suggesting there's some sort of change in the response that's reducing the impact. Elisa, the PhD student working with me, interestingly was able to get a much longer, actually 100-year record of data for New York City, and she converted. Let me go back here. She converted the heat part of this curve to a relative risk, which is shown here on the y-axis. So it's the relative risk of death at 29 degrees Celsius compared to 22 degrees Celsius. So that's the metric of exposure that we're using. And she divided the data up into decades. There were a couple decades in the middle of the century that were missing. There were no data. So she has data for the first five decades and then the last four decades of the 20th century. And there was a big change from the early part of the century to the latter part. And then in the latter part, there's this kind of exponential reduction of the kind that we were just seeing on the previous slide, where we look in most recent years. I think that what we're seeing in the early century to the later century has something to do with the epidemiologic transition away from a world that's dominated by infectious diseases to one where chronic diseases start to take over, and also that public health systems just become much more robust over time. So the effect goes down quite a lot, but then it continues to decrease in the latter part of the century, which I've always assumed is probably due to air conditioning, but we don't really know for sure if that's what's driving it. Another study by Bob et al. In Environmental Health Perspectives in 2014, looked across many cities in the United States, and I won't go through the details, but what you're seeing here is that the heat-related excess deaths, on the upper left-hand panel, are decreasing over time in her analysis. Over on the upper right, the effect is somewhat different for different age groups, but not a lot difference. Also some difference, but not a lot, on the lower left, which is the looking at different health outcomes, and also dividing the country into different regions, you got some variation over in the lower right. But generally, she's seeing this decrease in the heat-related effect over time that's, fitting a simple linear term. And then, looking more more globally, this is data from that paper that I think Remy's mentioned, from Environmental Health Perspectives, Gasparini et al. And if you look, this is hard to read from the distance where you're sitting. The light blue color is the 2006 data. The darker color, the black one, is 1993. So 1993 is early. The light blue is the later 2006 data. It's the story's not the same everywhere. These are country by country. So for the USA down on the lower right-hand side, we see something quite similar to what I've been talking about, where the more recent data seems to show a smaller heat effect. And that's generally what we see, although in Australia, the upper left one, it looks like it's the other direction, although the error bars are quite large. So it's a little bit hard to tell. Another study that came out a couple of years ago is this one by Nordio et al., which is also the Harvard data. And I'll just direct your attention to the sort of exponential decline. They had data from the early 1960s until 2006, and they're plotting the exposure response function, similar to what I showed you before. So sort of another consistent finding. This is for 211 cities. My student was just looking at New York City. This is data for 211 US cities, and on average, you know, they're seeing a similar kind of exponential decline in the heat-related effect. In Europe, one of the early studies was this one by Astrom and colleagues in Sweden, and they looked at both the effects of cold extremes on the top and also heat extremes, and it's a little bit hard to tell because of the way the data are plotted, but basically on the heat, on the lower plot, there was over the course of the 20th century, there was a reduction in the heat-related effect. And not really much evidence. There were some ups and downs, but not a real clear trend in the cold effect. So, you know, how do we interpret this? This paper from Arbuthnot et al. A couple of years ago in Environmental Health, you know, pointed out that there's different kinds of adaptations, some of which on the left side are focused more on the exposure, some that are focused more on biological pathways and factors that affect underlying population risk. And also sort of on the right side, you know, sort of tertiary responses that can be taken. I think it's really still really not clear exactly what's driving these results, but to the extent that there have been some analyses, it looks like air conditioning does play a role, but it doesn't seem to explain the whole story in these recent trends downward, especially I think if you look in a country like France, where air conditioning penetration is still, as I understand it, not very large, and yet we still see some kind of similar reductions. So I just wanted to wrap up by summarizing some key findings. There's mounting evidence that the heat effect is decreasing in magnitude over time. Evidence, which I didn't really show you this evidence, but it suggests that increasing air conditioner use plays a role, but it's not fully responsible. But understanding how purposeful interventions, which I'm not sure is what we're looking at here. I don't think we're necessarily seeing adaptation actions here in action, but we're going to need to do more of that as the climate warms. We're going to need to develop purposeful adaptations, and we need to understand how much they can help promote further heat health protection. So it's going to be really important to figure that out and figure out what are the most effective approaches. And then I'd also think it's important to understand how we can take these factors into account when we project future impacts of temperature on mortality so that public health agencies can plan for the future, you know, one, two, or many decades into the future. So where does this leave us? I think, you know, it is good news, and we don't have a lot of good news in climate change, but it is good news that heat impacts do appear to be declining on average, at least in, you know, the highly developed countries where we have the evidence. We don't have, you know, we really need to have evidence from other places. So energy intensive approaches to protection like air conditioning, you know, it seems to be effective, but it's not available for everybody, especially people that can't afford it, but also people that are in environments where air conditioning is not feasible, like working outdoors. Also, population aging is a factor that we have to think about, which could lead to greater heat vulnerability. Although I saw one recent paper from Spain that suggests that heat-related mortality impacts among working-age people may not be declining. So that's looking at this by age group, I think, is going to be important. And then finally, more rapid climate warming that we expect over the next couple of decades will really stress this system, and we're going to need to redouble efforts to ensure that the impacts of heat on mortality don't go up as time goes on. So I'm going to stop there and look forward to the discussion. Thank you.